welcome to another edition of the NHL Executive Suite. I'm Deb Placey. We always appreciate you tuning in, and we have a very special guest today. He is Doug Armstrong, the general manager of the Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues. Have you gotten used to hearing that yet, Doug?
It doesn't get old, I'll tell you that. Yeah, no, it's been an exciting summer.
So you're tanned and well-rested.
Yeah, the season goes long, obviously, into June, and then you have the draft and then free agency. But you get to August 1st and things settle down. And as you know, in Missouri, it's nice weather in August, nice and warm. So sat by the pool a little bit and enjoyed some downtime. But really excited to be here in Traverse City and get back to work.
So was there any point in the summer, whether it was right after you won the cup or even in August, where you woke up and were like, wait, did that happen? Did that really happen?
I would say more in August when you're just downtime thinking about following the cup, really when it's with the other guys on that you work with, whether it be coaches or trainers or players, and seeing the fun they're having with it. And I experienced that in Sarnia, Ontario with my family. And it really, you understand what it means to the people around you as much as it does yourself.
So let's go to Sarnia. And first of all, your dad's name is Neil Armstrong.
Yes. Yeah.
So how many times over the years have you been asked?
Countless. He either went to the moon or coached the Chicago Bears. One of the two.
The astronaut Neil Armstrong?
Yeah, yeah. That's not him. He's the official.
Okay. But a Hall of Fame official. A linesman, right?
Yeah.
So you never wanted to be a linesman, though?
No, I used to go to the old Olympia in Maple Leaf Gardens and see how those guys were treated by the fans. And I felt that's probably a good profession to stay away from.
How did he handle it? What kind of guy was he?
Well, he did it for so long, probably over 20 years. He had the Ironman. I think he went almost 1,900 games without missing an assignment, worked in the finals. So he was well respected by his peers in the league. And, at that time, probably still like that, it's they have two jobs. He was a golf pro in the summer also to make ends meet. And but to us, he was just dad, and I knew nothing different. When I was born, he was working, and that's just the way it was.
Did it ever bother you that fans got on him when you were in the rink and he was reffing?
No. He had it pretty easy as a linesman. It was the referees that really take it.
But he worked out really hard, right? He took his job seriously, and it sounds like you went along for those workouts.
Yeah, I did. Just as a he would get up in the mornings or go in the evenings, and I would tag along just to watch him work. And I think that's how you, in any profession, if you want to have the longevity that he had, I see a guy like Char that we just played against in the finals. You see his workout regime, and I think officials are the same way. If you want to do this for a long time, he did it late into his 40s, early 50s. You have to prepare for it.
So he also taught you the game of golf.
Yeah, I really enjoyed. As I said, he was a golf pro in the summer, and Sarnia is a small town, so we were able to get out on the course quite a bit. And then he and a group of friends bought a golf course, and he became the pro there. And so it was a lot of fun. Sarnia is a great town to grow up in. It's right on the lake, so the summers are great, and the winters are a little nicer than they now than they used to be. You get a lot of snow, lake effect snow, but it was a great place to grow up.
So part of your Stanley Cup celebration this summer included a hole in one. I saw. Give us the yardage. What club did you use?
Yeah, we were up at Cabot Links, and
where's that?
That's up just about a 3-hour drive from Halifax. It's a group that Kenny Holland puts together. It was 28 of us, and
so there were witnesses.
There was a lot of witnesses. Yeah, and so it was good. It was early. It was a golfer's trip. We played 36 holes a day for probably 5 or 6 days. So it happened on the second round. So I got it out of the way, and it was fun. It was on their signature hole. It was an 8-iron, 140 yards, and it was actually a pretty good shot. Some hole-in-ones aren't good. This one actually looked pretty good going in.
Who was in your foursome?
I had a couple of guys. John Buccigross was with us. Just guys that from our the group that goes all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So what else did you find yourself doing this summer when you had a little downtime besides playing golf?
Just sort of reconnecting with my wife, and my kids were home. This is the first summer they've been home. There, my daughter's just starting work in Dallas actually on Monday. She just got her master's in accounting and starting for KPMG. My son's in Boston College Law School, so he was working for a firm in St. Louis. So that was the first time they were in St. Louis for a long time, and it was great to spend the summer with them and just sort of reconnect and have a good time.
So you're like an empty nester now?
We are, yeah. It's it was strange having them back in this summer, quite honestly. You get to they're super to have around, but you get into a lifestyle with just you and your wife of doing things at your own timeline, and having people running around all the time was a little bit different, but it was a great summer.
What did you do with your day with the Cup?
I was fortunate. I had one in St. Louis where we took it, had three different events with smaller groups, and then a party at our house at the night, and then took it to Sarnia and did stuff with the Sarnia Stang hockey team to raise a little bit of money for the youth program there, and then took it to my dad's assisted living home to share it with the workers there and the staff, and then just again a couple more family parties, and it was back in St. Louis, and the coaches and I took it to Children's Hospital and the fire station and police station and things like that, trying to share it. And as we were talking about earlier, it's something that you understand it, but amazes me what how people's eyes light up and that how close they want to be to it and how they look at it, and it just brings out the best in people.
What was your dad's reaction to the Cup?
It was great, just bringing in there, and he was very proud. He was with the Montreal Canadiens as a scout for a number of years, and he won it there. But I think he's just proud of the fact that we had some success in St. Louis, and it was 20 years to the day actually that we had it when I was with Dallas and won. So it was a nice to bring it back in, and I said I don't know if either of us are going to be around in 20 more years, Dad.
For one more go at it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's neat. So your dad was obviously a big influence on you, and now he's dealing with these serious health issues, and you can tell us a little bit more about it, but how much was he able to watch the games, and and how was he feeling during the whole thing, and how has it been for you to sort of have to sort of separate that and run the team and do your job and know that he was trying to watch?
Well, he's in his 85, so a little bit of dementia sets in, so some days are better than others, and the couple of days leading up to being in Sarnia, they weren't great times. Our conversations were, his mind was wandering, but the day that we had I said the hockey god smiled on us. He was alert and bright and ready to go, and my sister still lives in Sarnia, and I give her a ton of credit. She does a lot of work keeping him happy, and so it's difficult to see your parents age. We lost my mom to cancer a few years back, and that generation, they're bonded very closely, and when one dies, a big part of the second person passes too. And it is what it is. You got to move forward, and I know he was proud, and I think during the tournament, he would be in and out on games. They told me he was very in tune in Game 7, which sort of surprised me. It was great to hear.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Now you are obviously a great golfer and a terrific athlete. You were not an NHL player. What was your what is the playing career of Doug Armstrong? Where did it end?
Yeah, it ended quite early. I actually enjoyed golf quite a bit. My father, as I said, was into hockey. I played a little bit growing up, but I realized pretty early I wasn't going to be in the NHL. And then when I went to college, I graduated and actually got into hockey. Bob Clark gave me a job with the Minnesota North Stars. They had just been dispersed. Some were going to San Jose, some were staying in Minnie, and Bob Clark said, your dad got you the job, but he won't keep it for you, so you better do hard work. And I look at my dad and two other gentlemen that I owe my career to. It's Bob Clark and Bob Gainey. Working with them in 1990-91, coming in, Bob was the manager and Bob Gainey was the coach, and their work ethic and how they put teams together. They shared a ton of information with me on how to work in the NHL. And Les Jackson was a good friend and someone I work with in Minnesota, Dallas, a couple of times. And he said it was like getting your MBA from Harvard working with those two guys. And it really was.
What did they teach you? What do you think you got from them?
I think the main thing was they're competitors, but it was always team first. You have to surround yourself with people that see the bigger picture. And they were two great captains champion players, and you know, they always put the team first, and that's really what we've tried to build in the organization I've worked with, is that there's something bigger than just yourself, and you're always working towards that, and no excuses. You know, how they played, how your fans will remember them as players, how they were as managers. They were relentless, hardworking people that didn't look for or accept excuses. They expected the job to get done, and you know, we had a lot of fun doing it, but there was a standard of excellence there that they demanded of themselves. And the way I was brought up and taught is that my fear was more or less not to let my dad or those two gentlemen down when I was working for them, because I know what they were pouring themselves into. So I put, I don't want to say pressure on myself, but I always wanted to do to show them how much I appreciated the opportunity they were giving me, and also try and get close to their work ethic and determination to build a winning team.
Well, it sounds like, you know, there was no job too small for you. I mean, you rolled up your sleeves, you sold tickets, right? You probably opened the, you know, unlocked doors and opened the seats, and you did everything.
Yeah, you start back in 1989, 90, actually, my first job was in the NHL, was in Washington. Just graduated college, trying to get into the hockey department, and there was nothing there. So David Poile got me a job, actually selling tickets. And then, but the departments were so small then, I was allowed to go down and help cut tapes with Todd Button, who was working in there. And then we would go watch a Baltimore Skipjacks. And the next year, I got into a hockey department. But the hockey department at that point was the manager, the administrative assistant, and usually one other person. I was that guy. So you got to learn everything from watching Bob negotiate contracts to team travel, to everything that goes associated with the team stats. And, you know, the game has changed so much over the last 27, 28 years, the number of people, analytics department, there was no such thing as an analytical right. department. And probably the thing that was most beneficial for me is when I just started out, salary disclosure came. And so the players, you know, contracts were escalating, and you had to have a better knowledge of what other guys were making and how to do it. And that really gave me an opportunity to try and assist Bob Clark and Bob Gainey in contract preparation and things like that. And then when Bob Clark left to go back to Philly, Bob Gainey had both jobs as the coach and the manager, which opened up a huge door of trying to just take care of the day-to-day things. Again, trying to make Bob's job on the ice as easy as possible by doing everything behind the scenes. And, you know, just... You're right. You got to go in there and you got to do it. And, you know, the money catches up to you later. It doesn't catch up to you early. And I just tried to do the best I could do and keep moving ahead. And I was at the right place at the right time a lot. That move down to Dallas was great for our family and our franchise. When the team sold to Mr. Hicks, he had extremely deep pockets, and we brought in Eddie Belfour and Brett Hall and won a championship, and to be part of that. And then, you know, it's been such a great ride. Then the, you know, the salary cap comes in and all the dynamics change, and just trying to stay current and learning all those things. But, it was a lot of fun, but you had to do a lot of work. But, we actually said, my wife and I were talking about it. It seems like when you work in pro sports, if it's a job, then you're probably in the wrong industry, because this has just been nothing but fun from day one.
So what was different about the St. Louis situation when you got there versus what you'd been dealing with in Dallas? How'd you set yourself up with the Blues?
Well, when I first got to Minnesota before I went to Dallas, it was a lot like St. Louis in the sense that the team wasn't very good, and it was trying to get better. They had a number one pick in Mike Modano, a top 10 pick in Darian Hatcher, but to do that you got to do a lot of losing. And when I got into St. Louis, they had the same thing with Eric Johnson, a number one pick, Alex Pietrangelo, number four pick, and so we started to grow. And the one thing that after winning this year in St. Louis, the difference between winning in St. Louis and Dallas was we were only in Dallas 5 years and we won. There was a lot of scar tissue built up in St. Louis, you know, 52 years of scar tissue. And I didn't really realize when I got there how the long lifetime Blue fans were really frustrated with the organization, that they couldn't get over the top. And I said, it was our second or third year, we had 100 plus points, made it the second round, and it was same old Blues. And I said, like, I don't know why you're painting this group of guys
with the same brush
that happened to the Federcos and Halls and McGinnis. This is a new group, and let us create our own failures. And then we went on to do that for about 7 years of playoffs. But it was great this year. And just the magnitude of what it meant to the city surprised me when we won the parade. And just it's sort of like Wilt Chamberlain's 100 points. Like, everyone I've talked to told me they've been a season ticket holder for 52 years. If that's the case, we'd be playing 100,000 arena. But it just meant so much to the city and so much to our fan base. And it's just that was the biggest difference, though, was the scar tissue that was built up. Finally, we can scrape that away.
Well, it's interesting for a couple reasons. You know, St. Louisans are scarred because the Cardinals, the NFL team, left almost in the middle of the night like the Cleveland Browns did. And then the Rams, another NFL team, leaves. The whole city really is behind the Cardinals and the Blues. You know, the whole community, the St. Louis is a city where everyone roots for the same team. So it brings the city together like many other sort of metropolis can't.
Exactly. You know, I was there when the Rams left for LA, and it was interesting because the years that I was there, they were so bad that it didn't seem like a big deal when they left, because it was like 3 win seasons, 4 win seasons. So I wasn't there when they had the greatest show on turf. And
right.
But when they left, it scarred the city. It scarred the people there. And I thought that the ownership of the Blues and the ownership of the Cardinals coming together and doing so many things with the organizations together really solidified that it is a sports town. It's a great sports town. Understanding that the Cardinals are the alpha male. I've been fortunate to work in two cities. The Cowboys were the alpha male when I was in Dallas too. But you know, you can cut out a little piece of the pie, and they're fortunate enough to share that pie with us now. And our relationship with the Cardinals is fantastic, and we try and emulate what they do in the community and off the field. They're a model franchise, and we're trying to build to where we become a really good partner with the city and with them.
What's your favorite St. Louis food to eat?
Oh, that's a hard one. I didn't even know they were toasted raviolis till I got there, but those are actually pretty good.
All right, I'll give you that. Where did you go celebrate? Favorite restaurant or?
Paul Mano's is a place that we go to quite a bit, my wife and I, and it's a place that's in a little strip mall, and you wouldn't think it's a great place, but Al McGinnis took us there when we first moved to St. Louis, and we've loved it there. And then Cafe Napoli in Clayton's a really good spot, but the Hill's always a great spot. So it's a great town with lots of great restaurants.
So you mentioned Al McGinnis, just saw him walking down the hall. Here, he's with you. One of the most amazing things about the Blues organization the last decade is the emergence of the second generation. These great players that were there before did a lot of winning. Obviously, they had that streak where they went to the playoffs more years than any team, I think, in North American history for a while in any sport. And their kids all started playing hockey now, the Tkachuks, and a lot of these kids are in the NHL and playing at a high level. And they just seem to be a part, sort of a secondary part of the resurgence of hockey in the area.
It was fantastic. And when I took the job in St. Louis, my son was starting high school, my daughter was starting grade 7, so I wanted to go to a place that was going to be great to raise my family, as important as it was to go to a city where I wanted to work. And the alumni association with the Blues is fantastic, and a lot of players, when they get there, they'll if they move on, they always come back to raise their kids there, because it's just a great place to raise a family. It's a small, I always call it, it's a really big small town, so when the players go back there, I think they tell me Basil McRae was really the first one to really take charge of the youth program. Philip, his son, played there, and then actually was drafted by the Blues in the second round. And then you had that next generation of players. That 1 year, I think we had five, maybe six guys drafted in the first round. That was a heck of a team with Brown and Keller and Tkachuk and lots of those kids in that same age bracket there. And it's giving now. And now you see Barrett Jackman's coaching, Pronger's coaching. There's Andy McDonald's coaching. So there's a lot of guys still live there, and they do give right back into our community.
Okay, so I also had a chance to talk to Craig Berube before you and I sat down, and I asked him to tell me something I didn't know about you. And he wasn't giving much up, yeah. But he did say that you did take the interim tag away once you got to a certain point. It wasn't, you pretty much did the deal before you won the cup.
Well, yeah, I talked to him maybe a couple of weeks left, probably a month left in the season, and said, you know, I don't want to negotiate a contract right now, because we all think it's going to be smooth, but there's always hiccups in the road. But you're not, this is your job if you want it when the year's over, regardless of how we finish. And then we just kept winning and winning, and it was a good problem. And
then you thought, shoot, I should have signed him a month ago.
Well, no, I don't mind paying him. You always love paying for success. But it, I said to him when we signed, I said, we should just name you the interim coach for the next 3 years. We've had success with that. But Craig's someone that that I learned to work with very quickly. I really respect his professionalism, his demeanor. You know, he's a man's man. Players respect him. Our staff respects him. And I learned a lot working with Craig, and I'm really looking forward to the next 3 years of continuing to grow and hopefully build something that can have a positive, lasting legacy in St. Louis hockey.
I asked him what he remembered about when you basically offered him the job or gave him the job. And he said it really, not much needed to be said. It was really awkward for everybody. You felt bad for Mike Yeo, the whole situation. A lot of people have asked you why was that, you know, why did it work or why do you think you offered him the job? In hindsight, now that it's been a few months, when you look back on it, why do you think it worked?
Well, I think there was probably a few things. You know, Craig did a fantastic job bringing the group together, but I also think the group was ready to come together. It was they're proud athletes, and we had a lot of pundits picking us to be a top team in the league, and our pride was hurt, quite honestly, in October and November, because we thought we were going to be good and we weren't. And so the perfect storm was brewing up and we had to make a change. I felt bad for Mike Yeo because I think the guys were going to turn the corner, but it just wasn't happening quick enough. And Mike is a very good coach, and he'll be a head coach again in this league. But when Craig came in, I think it heightened the anticipation of what we told the players we expect, which is we have to win hockey games. We're a salary cap team. We have high expectations, and Mike Yeo is no longer the coach. And you guys, like, we will all be leaving before Craig Berube leaves. So let's get to work here. And then Binnington coming in, you know, you can say what you want when you get a guy coming in, I think he went 25-4, you know, and then go win 16 playoff games. That's history-making goaltending, and we were able to get that. So, but I the one thing that I've heard the players give Craig credit for was every team has the standings up when they walk in, and we were at the bottom. He just said, let's just take those down. Like, we can't come in here every day seeing that hill we have to climb. Let's just go to work. And so all those reminders of how we were playing were gone, and we just started to build a new foundation. And we were playing some really good hockey and losing games, but there was a different feeling that we knew we were close. But quite honestly, all the way until February, I wasn't sure, you know, what we were going to do. We made a trade with Buffalo last year for Ryan O'Reilly and gave him a first-round pick, but it was top 10 protected. So if we were picking the top 10, we were going to keep that pick. And so I went to the U18 in February in Russia to scout those players, thinking that we still could be there. And quite honestly, the guy said, don't come back. They went on that winning streak. I thought my passport was going to be null and void in the airport in St. Louis. But no, we came back, and that's when we started to take off. But there was the foundation was starting to build there. And then we started to find ways to win games instead of find ways to lose games. We had a game early in the year in Montreal where we had a turnover with 2 seconds left, ended up in our net. You walk away with no points. And those things were haunting us. And then, you know, really the turnaround was on the father's trip. We were in Florida. I was watching it from Sochi and we were down in the third period and scored 2 goals and won that game, and then went to Tampa and won 1-0. Then we beat Nashville in a home and home. And so those are four good games. And that was in the middle of our 11 game winning streak too. And that really solidified that we weren't going to be selling our star players.
So you didn't come close to being sellers, or how close did you come to thinking about, even a couple weeks before then, maybe we're going to make some moves at the deadline and be sellers?
I would say December and January we were approaching it that if things didn't turn around, we were going to have to see if we had the right mix to compete with the top teams. But the great thing was for us is that those trades don't happen till the deadline, and so there was no urgency to try and do it. Even if I wanted to do something, people don't make those trades at that time of year. So the NHL is very hard and fast, and when you make trades for some reason, people just wait till the last second. And then by that time, I knew we weren't going to be trading those players. We were on a roll. As I said, that we laugh, like, you're going to look back in 10 years and say, well, yeah, they won the cup. They had 99 points. They were a pretty good team. I said, that was the strangest way to get to 99 points I had ever seen in my life.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Was it a risk? Did you think of it as a risk at the time to trade for Ryan?
Not really, just because I knew the core of our team with we had done it the year before bringing Shen in. We had Pietrangelo, Parenko, Tarasenko, Schwartz, Shen at the time. You know, we wanted to build around that group and try and take a we said that when we brought O'Reilly in, we were entering the first year of what we thought is a 5-year window. So now we're 1 year into that and had some success. But I think we can still do great things over the next 4 years. And then it's hard because you need top players to win in this league. And to get top players, you have to pick high. It's hard. And we haven't had a top pick in, I'd say 10 years since I've been there. We've been very fortunate. I think over the last 10 years, I know over the last 8 years, no one's won more regular season games than the St. Louis Blues, it's hard to imagine that because we've had the playoff failures, but we've had a good team. And so you're always picking late. And I give our amateur staff a ton of credit, like a young player like Vince Dunn or Robert Thomas. They came in and were big players on our team this year. When you need those guys, you can't just rely on free agency to solve all your ills because it's too expensive. So you need good players not making big money.
Can we give you credit for Alex Pietrangelo?
No, it goes to Jarmo Kekalainen's group. They okay. did a great job there. I was that was my first year there, and it was an interesting. It was four players there: Bogosian, Stammer, and Doughty. Well, I remember listening to Jarmo and his staff talk, and I got let go in Dallas in November, so I wasn't in our amateur meetings to know much about these players. Usually that happens in December, January, February. You start to understand the draft. So I was following the NHL through the internet, you can pick up information, but you're not getting, and I wasn't seeing these young players. So I remember when they drafted Petro, they said he has a chance to be one of the top players in the draft, but he's probably the furthest away from playing, meaning it was going to take a couple of years. You know, when you look back on it, I know Alex didn't like it that way. We sent him back to junior twice, and he came in as a 20-year-old and never looked back. So I picked that up from Bob Clark and Bob Gainey too, is the NHL fails more players than players fail the NHL, meaning you put guys in spots to fail, they're going to fail. We have to put them in place to succeed. And to do that, it's sometimes, you know, keeping them in the minors a year longer or keeping them back in junior a little bit longer, because it's a man's league. You're playing for your livelihood and to put food on the table, and you put an 18 or 19 year old that's not ready for that, they can get scarred to the point where they don't come back. And so I've always believed, learning that from Bob and Bob, that, you know, you're better to overripe these guys than put them in there too early. And we did that with Petro, and we've tried to do that in my time as a manager. There's only two players that have played none have played 18 year old and 19 year old, and that's Robbie Fabry and Robbie Thomas. I just don't believe in it. But sometimes when they say we're good enough, you listen to them too. And both of those guys, Robbie Fabry, as a 19-year-old, he went to the semifinals that year and lost to San Jose, and they went on to play Pittsburgh for the championship. But he played very good hockey, and then he got hurt. He's had two major knee injuries since then. And then Robbie Thomas, the same thing. He had done everything he could in junior. He'd won the Memorial Cup. He'd won the World Junior, and I asked Robbie last year at Christmas. The Team Canada wanted him. They were going to make him part of their leadership group. And we were starting to play a little bit better, but still weren't there. And I said, do you want to go represent Canada? And he said, no, I don't really. I love playing for Team Canada, but I did that last year and we won. I want to be part of the solution here. And then that's really what you want to hear as a manager. And he was part of the solution. Him and Bozak and Maroon became a fantastic line for us the second half of the year. And Robbie got injured and played hurt for a large portion of it until he just couldn't anymore. And then he had the wrist surgery. But his future is going to be very bright. And that's what, again, I give it to our amateur staff, to get a guy in the 20s that you're counting on to be a core player for a long time. Doesn't happen very often. When you do it, you're really thankful.
So, speaking of putting someone in a good situation to succeed, Pat Maroon was like the perfect fit for you all. And I'm slightly devastated that he's not coming back. How did that all go down?
Well, it was interesting when you go back to last July, where I knew he wanted to play in St. Louis, but we had just brought in Ryan O'Reilly. We had signed Bozak. We had signed Perron. We knew we had other guys that we couldn't that we need to sign over the next couple of years, so we couldn't do a longer term deal. And Pat wanted to play for St. Louis. I think he was there, and he was starting to get the excitement, as I talk about people saying, well, you've had a good summer, you're going to be a good team in July. And I think he believed that also, and he wanted to be part of it. So he did take a contract that he left money on the table from different groups, but he came in and like our whole organization got off to a slow start. And but when he found his footing, he became a big part of our team on the ice. But more importantly, he's a great locker room guy. The guys gravitate to him, and they feed off of his energy, and he's just a big lovable bear. And the guys just, you know, everyone loved being around him. He's myself included. And then probably one of the things that I'll look back on in 20 years or 30 years is game 7, double overtime. We were playing some of the best hockey we played all year, but couldn't get one past local boy Ben Bishop. And then Patty gets that double overtime goal, and I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about that, the excitement on his face, and then seeing the excitement on his fiance's face and his parents and his son. And those are things that you know, the people are really what make this game great, and that's something I'm never going to forget. And unfortunately, this year we just didn't have the ability to get our restricted guys signed by the time he had to make a decision. And maybe that's probably for the best too. Like, you know, he's going to leave. He's going to be an icon in St. Louis. The memories are going to be him carrying the Stanley Cup. Memories, that goal, the parade, and you know, our goal is to repeat, but he's got that in his back pocket that you can never take away. And I wish him nothing but the best in Tampa. And he's put himself in a great spot to try and have another parade, and our job is to try and stop that.
And still, I'll always remember the camera caught his fiance and his son, where when you're up high, you don't always know exactly what happened. And it just hit her, and she turned to his son and said, "It was your dad." Yeah. Like, they weren't really sure who scored, and then when they figured it out, she was like, "It was your dad." It was
unbelievable. And then just, you know, having him come into the locker room after, and part of you as a manager, you're excited, but you want to get back to work like almost immediately. Okay, we got San Jose coming up, let's not get too high on this. And then you see that, and you know, you start to feel the emotion of it. And then it was just great. That was one of the coolest memories of my career in the NHL. And that includes a couple of Stanley Cups and Olympics and things like that. Just watching Pat and his family.
Did you shed a tear during the cup?
I'm a crier, yeah. So.
you almost were going to cry just now,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. It, as I said, it's very emotional. Like, I just really a big fan of Pat's. And those things are going to stay with me for a long time.
When did you cry during the cup run?
A little bit after, you know, just not sobbing, crying, but just the emotion. I tried to stay out of the fray. I learned Lou Lamoriello, I heard, did that once. And then in the Olympics in Sochi, Steve Yzerman stayed up in the box when we went down, and they both said they wanted to take it in. So I haven't won enough to stay out in the box, but I got on the bench and I didn't go on the ice. And I just tried to watch everybody and their families, and you know, it that was really special. You're seeing like the Shens and the father and son, and you know, as a kid, you remember I remember my mom and dad taking me to the rink at 6 a.m. or building that rink in the backyard and having the kids skate over there. And you could see those emotions in their eyes reflecting back on those times. And then you have the ownership group, and it was great just to sort of stay back a little bit. I couldn't stay back too long. My emotions got the better of me. I had to jump in there and enjoy the party, but it was a lot of fun. And just knowing what it meant to Craig Berube and his staff, and you know, Layla was there, the inspirational things that happened to our team all year long. There was just so much that sort of bubbled up there that you get a lump in your throat just at that time, thinking that this is really cool.
Well, you said you're not that used to winning, but you are the only person, did you know, who is a double, triple gold. So it's 2 Stanley Cups, 2 gold medals from the Olympics, and 2 world championships.
Yeah.
So you're nodding. You knew you were the only one. That's a lot of winning.
Yeah, yeah. And then the World Cup, too. that was a lot of fun a few years ago. But, yeah, it's, again, a lot of that's just being around at the right place at the right time. You know, I go back to talking about Bob, another guy that it's contemporary, but I learned a lot from was Steve Yzerman. You know, he was a young manager. I probably had more experience managing, but he's Steve Eiserman. And when he allowed me to help on his staff at the World Championships in Moscow when we won, and then the next year we lost in Halifax and Quebec City. Then the next year I managed and we got silver. But then that led into the Olympics, and I had just a blast working with him and Kevin Lowe and Kenny Holland and Peter Shirelli on the last one. And you surround yourself, you're lucky enough to be surrounded by such great, so many great people that unless you're trying not to learn, you're going to learn a lot. And I learned a lot from all those guys. And a lot of that, I have to say thank you to Bob Nicholson and Steve Eisenman for giving me that opportunity with Hockey Canada.
What are you going to do for an encore? That's what I want to know.
Well, you know, we're trying to tell our staff, anybody can do it once, the great teams do it twice. So our goal is to get it done again. And I know our players are excited to get to work next Thursday and Friday. And we're excited to get back there too. It's going to be, we're trying to get ourselves prepared for the emotional ride that training camp's going to be.
Do you think there'll be a hangover, Stanley Cup hangover?
I think there will, only because I see it in St. Louis now that it's been 52 years and no one wants to let it go. And I don't blame them.
Right.
You know, I don't really want to let it go either, except I have to. We have a day job. We have to get prepared. And but there's a lot of people telling everyone how great they are, and they were great, and they did accomplish something great. But nobody cares anymore. It's certainly the other teams that want that cup. And so what we have to do is we have to try and prepare and stop the talk in the locker room. There's going to be enough around the city about it. And these are great things. These are high-class problems. You know, opening night, the banner, the cup being back in town, the ring ceremony. Like, I'm not complaining about any of these things, but these are things that we have to compartmentalize, but also get ready to do our job. Because if we don't, you know, we start off with Washington, then a great Dallas team, and then going to Toronto. Like, you don't want to start off on a shaky footing. We did that last year. It was no fun.
That's right. You've done that before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can use that as motivation.
Yes, exactly.
All right, well, enjoy that night when they raise the banner and you get your rings. Congratulations. I won't say it again.
Well, thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to our chat with Doug Armstrong. Do feel free to rate and review. Any feedback is much appreciated. Let us know what you think, who you'd like to hear from, and it's always free to subscribe. You should check out the other shows on our NHL Podcast Network, The Great One-on-One with Wayne Gretzky. If you're a fantasy player, there's NHL Fantasy on Ice. And Dan Rosen follows everything that's happening, and everything you need to know is on NHL at the Rink. Until next time, I'm Deb Placey in the NHL Executive Suite.